Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality in Ireland. And today we are going global. We are doing the first of our special Reboot Republic podcasts in partnership with the Fight Inequality Alliance, a global movement that is campaigning to end the excessive concentration of power and wealth in the hands of a small elite and to achieve a just and equal and sustainable world. We're very excited to share and discuss what the inequality situation is around the world, the global protests against inequality in Davos that are coming up, and what you can do. And today we're joined by three inspiring young inequality activists from across the world. We have with us Maria Ayala, who is the research coordinator in Acción Ciudadana Frente a la Pobreza in Mexico and part of Fight Inequality Alliance Mexico. She has a master's degree in demography, and so in the Fight Inequality Alliance helps with statistical information and data analysis. Muchas gracias por estar conmigo hoy, María.
Muchas gracias, and thanks for the very good Spanish.
I try, yes, from time to time, but I'm afraid my other... Muchas gracias. And we're also joined by Kulumano Michali Nigasila, who is a young queer activist, student activist, and community leader in South Africa. She's been in activism for over 3 years, serving as an organizer for equal education in the Western Cape, and was elected into the Unite Behind Secretariat, and serves as the current spokesperson of the Black People's National Crisis Committee, and was recently recognized by the Mail and Guardian newspaper as the top 200 young South Africans in 2020, and she is a member of the Fight Inequality Alliance South Africa Steering Committee. Kulumano, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great, and I'm sorry for the name pronunciation. I'm trying.
Yeah, it's quite difficult. It's actually Kulumano Michali Gasela.
You go again, go again.
Kulumano Michali Gasela.
Beautiful. Thank you. And then lastly, we have Mualima Lutango Daisy, who is a Zambian youth activist and the national coordinator for the Fight Inequality Alliance in Zambia. She's passionate about women's health and rights, social justice, governance, as well as human rights protection. Mualima, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And yeah, nice to join you here.
Great, and looking forward to chatting to you on this. And I suppose just to put some context on this, the COVID pandemic is devastating people across the world, and inequality has worsened as people have been pushed in further into poverty and the wealth of billionaires has increased. The current economic system, as the Fight Inequality Alliance states, is failing us. And even now we have the World Economic Forum calling for a great reset of capitalism. The 1% know that neoliberalism has failed people and the planet. But we don't need a reset of capitalism. We need a new economic model, which is based on human rights, dignity, equality for all, and the environmental sustainability of our planet. Now, during the pandemic, we have also witnessed moments of hope from ordinary people, from frontline workers, incredible achievements of science, public health, and community cooperation. And to draw on Arundhati Roy, the pandemic provides a portal to another place. We can either drag our destruction with us or enter with the hope and intention to build a sustainable and equal world. And those who believe we can and must achieve that change are organizing across the world as part of the Fight Inequality Alliance to protest about exploitation and cheating and abuse. And they are taking global action against the annual meeting of the global elite, which is usually in the Swiss mountain resort of Davos, but this year has moved online. And the Fight Inequality Alliance is promoting a people's alliance, a people's recovery, which I'll be talking about in an upcoming podcast with Jenny Ricks, who's the global convener of Fight Inequality Alliance. And it's important also to highlight that as most of our listeners are Irish, it is important to highlight that here in Ireland, in a country with huge wealth, we have inequalities. The most extreme is thousands of children and their families who are left homelessness, while the top 20% of households in Ireland own 3/4 of all the wealth. And of course, Ireland's corporate tax avoidance system helps the global wealthy avoid tax and contributes to global inequality. So I'm going to start today by asking each of the activists, just in regard to your own country, what are the issues of inequality today? And has anything really changed dramatically during the pandemic? And I'll go first to Maria.
Yeah, thank you. So the pandemic came to the most unequal region in the world. So the pandemic didn't gave us a lot of problems. It made bigger the problems that already existed here in this region, and particularly in Mexico. We have, I think, two types of crisis. One is obviously the health system crisis that right now, as I'm speaking, is really, really, really saturated, is dramatic. And it came from a very complex and very unequal system, health system. So we have, I'm going to be as short as I can because it's really complex. So here in Mexico, it doesn't, depends on only if you have a job or not. It's different for if you have a job for the oil company, the Pemex company, or it's different if you work for the government, and it's different if you work for another company, and it's different if you don't have a formal job. And in a country that 60% of employed people don't have any social security before the pandemic, it gets really, really dramatic because almost anybody has social security and health services. And in the middle of this pandemic and in the middle of this problem, the government presented the public budget last year, 4% less budget to social services to 2021. So you can imagine how disconnected are the reality of the pandemic and of the country and the actions that governments are taking. So in the other hand, the inequalities, the economic inequalities and the economic crisis came to a country which the 50% of the employed people before the pandemic didn't have enough money to sustain themselves and another person. I mean, they couldn't sustain a family of two. And here in Mexico, we don't have families of two. So it's like $300 a month. So, and also the 60% of households lost at least 50% of their income. So we can imagine how the pandemic changed the reality of the households, because in a very poor part of the country, because we know we have some of the most millionaire people in the world, but this part of the most vulnerable and most poor people, they are really, really suffering. We had a forum like in May maybe, and one activist that has they have like free food for poor people. They was telling us that families are taking decisions like which meal they should skip, or which children of the family shouldn't have one meal. So we can see how dramatic is the changes of the pandemic in a country that already had really dramatic realities and really unequal realities. And also, these inequalities has different faces. It's more dramatic and it's worse for women, it's worse for young people. I think that maybe in other countries it's the same, but here in Mexico, we have, for example, 70 million women that can't even go and look for a job because they are taking care of someone, or they are making housekeepers. So it has different faces, and it is a very complex problem because it has a history, a previous history, a long history. So the pandemic only make like bigger the already existing problems.
And you've set it out quite well there in terms of, you know, that real real impact, you know, on equality, you know, on poverty and the reality facing people. Has it become the issue of inequality and people talking about it? Do people talk about it? Is it a political or social issue that's being highlighted?
I think that here in Mexico is more like listened and the public conversation the poverty issue, because we are used to it. I don't know if I can be clear, but since I have memory, in every campaign, political campaign, there is the candidate like in a photo with an indigenous kid or with an indigenous woman, and they dressed up like indigenous regions, because I think that we have in the collective thinking like that the issue is the poverty that is in the rural areas, and that is really focused. And I think that is because it's very far away from the city, and it's very far away. So in the collective imaginary is like a problem so big that I can't make a solution. And it's been there for forever. I think that we don't even imagine Mexico without poverty.
Yeah.
So I think that if we change the conversation and we turn around to inequalities, we can see that it's possible, because there are money, because we have money. We have a very big and a very dynamic economy. And if we turn the view to to inequalities, we can see that also we have the other extreme of the situation, because we have a lot of millionaire people. So I think that it's very, very important to talk about inequalities, because we can see like the light at the end of the tunnel, and also we can open our minds and open our seeing about other types of poverty. I mean, the communities are with the most people in poverty are really nearby Mexico City. So I mean, is this kind of poverty the people that work all the time, that work so much, 8, 10, 12 hours, really far away from home, and they come back and they don't have any money, enough money to can provide for their families. So in terms of the communication, the social communication here in Mexico, historically, it has been, I think, like very very partial about the problem. And if you ask everyone, I mean, in the general population, it's like they have this image of poverty very far away, that it doesn't have any solution. And I think it's very important that they don't work. They think like this. I mean, I think globally is known this image in a cactus, like a man sleeping like beside it and with a sombrero, and I think many people in the world think like, that's Mexico, in a country that really works hard, and they doesn't have the conditions to provide for their families, and also with the pandemic, they doesn't have any money to keep them alive.
Thank you, Maria, for that, you know, picture of Mexico and inequality in Mexico. That was, you know, really, really interesting and important, and well described. And I'll come back to you on solutions, which is what we want to look at in the next part. Chulumanu, in terms of South Africa, what has been the experience there? What is the, you know, in terms of inequality and, you know, how the pandemic has affected it or not?
Thank you so much, Rory. So for us in South Africa, really, the pandemic just amplified and highlighted the problems that we already knew existed. For example, 90% of the wealth in the country only belongs to 10% of the population. And so the other 90% of the population is left then scrambling for the 10% of the wealth. So things like the bare minimum of services like electricity, water, housing is something that people fight for every day. So at the beginning and the onset of the pandemic, we saw two people not having places to live to begin with, people being evicted because of land grabs, because land grabs currently in South Africa and land occupations is something that is at its all-time high. because people don't have houses, and housing is a very big thing in South Africa. So people grab land and they occupy land for building little shacks and occupying because they don't have housing. So we saw to government demolishing, you know, thousands and thousands of houses because people were grabbing land. They didn't have places to live and all of that. So it was really amplified during the, because we also went into a lockdown in our country. So it was really amplified at that time because of also retrenchments, on top of the fact that there was already a very high rate of unemployment in South Africa. So everything just economically became a mess. And it was really amplified in the way that people lived, you know, and in the violence in the communities, and just the way that generally people lived in our communities. It was really amplified. Whilst at the very same time, the other 10% of the population that is living nicely, half of it is not even in the country because they're overseas and they've left their mansions unoccupied. Whilst those people in the townships and in squatter camps and in informal settlements that are not even living safely. Education was highly disturbed. And, you know, the government tried introducing, particularly in tertiary institutions, online learning. And that was something that failed dismally because most of South African students come from very remote villages that don't have network coverage and all of that. So education was very disturbed. A lot of students weren't able to participate in the academic year, which is also what really highlighted the inequality in South Africa, that only a certain number of students, that is very few and very little, were able to access education, were able to access classes and all of that. And even now, starting with the new academic year, the government has not really come with a clearer plan of how the fact that a lot of students were left behind and how they are now going to be able to catch up, because South Africa is facing a second wave that is very much more dangerous, and the second variant that is very much more dangerous that also has now put the country on a standstill. So a lot of things and a lot of inequalities were just highlighted, you know, in terms of telling people to social distance. There's no way that people in the township can do that because the moment I go out of my door, your door is right in front of mine, you know, that type of thing. And people in poor communities, particularly townships, are the ones that are contracting the coronavirus most. And the healthcare system of South Africa is collapsing at the same time because it is not able to handle it. And that is the thing. The healthcare system was like that to begin with. And with COVID-19 now, it has proven to be way too overwhelming for the health system, and it can't handle that. And so it has also been another scramble where the government has even set up tents on parking lots of the hospital to accommodate patients that are coming in at high numbers every day. So everything in the country is a mess, and it is just being amplified every day that there is this huge inequality, with South Africa being one of the most inequal countries in the entire world, you know, particularly the city that I'm in, the city of Cape Town, you know. So it just amplified everything in terms of failure in service delivery, with corruption, with just all these inequalities in education, in the healthcare system, and just in everything, and showing their gaps and the unemployment, and with people just having no means to live at all because most of them were unemployed already. And the grants that are promised by government don't even get to them. And those that get to them, it's just too little money to be able to support a family of maybe like 12 living in a one-room shack, you know, and also failing now with the whole thing of online education and online learning, because there is no way that that could be a proper environment for you, for one to learn, you know. So it just really amplified everything that was already going wrong with the country. And it just became that much more of anxiety and a depression for the entire country.
Thank you so much. That really is a, you know, a stark, you know, picture of the harshness of inequality in South Africa today. And thank you for that. And I will come back to you in regards of what you think needs to be done shortly now. Thank you, Kulumanu. So next we have Mwilima Lutango Daisy, who's a Zambian youth activist. In terms of Zambia, how has, you know, what is the situation with inequality and how has the pandemic affected that or worsened it, or is it the same?
Hi. So I think in terms of Zambia, our situation is not very different from South Africa, maybe because we're in the same region or something. But I think, like my comrade from South Africa earlier said, the pandemic has really only amplified already existing inequalities that were already knew existed and probably failed to accept that they were actually there. An example I'll give you is the poor public healthcare system that we already have. So I think during the times of the pandemic, we've seen how worse the system can be. We do have in most facilities fewer healthcare providers. So now you find with the pandemic, most healthcare providers have to go and attend to COVID-19 patients. And then you find very few, maybe only one person at the facility. And then you have a really long queue, which that means that there's no room for social distancing because then you have too many patients waiting outside while everybody else is at the COVID center. But also if you look at how the healthcare system is structured right now, you do have sections within the quarantine centers that have ventilators which are specific for VVIPs, like literally a section for very important people or something like that. So why is the rest of the population going when you have within the same healthcare system areas for the rich, and then you have areas for everybody else that's not an MP or not a minister or something like that? It just makes things seem the way they've always been, because now most of our duty bearers, people that have money, cannot fly out of the country, so they have to create a small separate segment for themselves where they can feel comfortable and have the best of the healthcare while the rest languish somewhere else. Also, you find that with COVID, when you get tested from a public healthcare institution, you get your results maybe like 14 days later or sometimes never at all. So you remain with that anxiety, you remain with that, like you're consistently worried about what could have happened, what's going on and stuff like that. But when you test for a private institution, you get your results within 15 minutes, which means only the people that have the resources and the money can actually afford to carry out those tests at private healthcare institutions, and they're able to get their results and they have a free mind afterwards, and they can continue with their daily businesses and stuff like that. But the rest of us that can't afford that have to wait for our tests and sometimes just never ever get the results, which makes things very complicated. If you look at the education system, for example, so we had closed schools for a really long time last year, but we had to reopen them because young people had to continue with school. And one of the things that you notice with regards to that is, for example, private institutions have very few young people in one class, so there's easy social distancing, they can continue learning and those types of things. But in terms of public institutions, there's so many people in one class. You have a classroom with 90 students, with 90 pupils. So whether you like it or not, they cannot social distance. So sometimes you have the same class split into four different classes. And instead of young people learning for the 4 hours that they have to learn for an hour and give an opportunity to their colleagues to also come and learn, which means the quality of education that they're receiving is not the same as the quality of education that their friends who have got money and are going to private institutions are receiving. Not that there's anything wrong with going to a private institution, but the fact that we cannot improve our public institutions so much so that we cannot attain the same standards is then really worrisome. You can also talk about the digital divide, right? Most people from tertiary institutions and universities were learning online, and like I think my colleague from South Africa was saying, you find that so many of you are coming from villages. The internet is really poor. Sometimes you don't even have internet at all. When you're in school, you can lend a laptop from your friend, but you don't have that in the village where you are. You don't have access to internet. You don't even have access to normal phone calls that you just need a basic network for, meaning you can't learn throughout the semester, but somehow you're expected to write the exams. So already you're cut out of the system because of that which you cannot afford and that which you cannot do. So I think these are some of the things that COVID has highlighted, right? There's also the issue of power cuts, for example. It's been going on for a really long time, but I think it's only become really, really more clear during the COVID pandemic, because then even when you're talking about social distancing, you're telling people to stay at home. You stay at home, you are doing a very small business, which is hand to mouth. What are you going to eat? You have to really choose whether you go out. We don't really have an actual lockdown, but you have to decide, do you go out and die of COVID, or do you stay inside and die of hunger? You literally have a choice between hunger and COVID. Either way, you get one of the two and stuff like that. And so the power cuts just made that really worse, because people with bigger businesses from shopping malls and stuff like that, they can afford to have backup generators or other sources of power, but you in a shanty compound or something like that do not have access to any of those things. So once the power cuts for 8 hours, sometimes as long as 16 hours you don't have power, there's no business for you at all. We had our bars closed for a really, really long time last year. But some were allowed, at the point when they were allowed to open, you're told you can only have 50 people, they have to maintain social distancing, they have to do 1, 2, 3, 4. But if you have a bar in a shanty compound or in the township, it's a small space where even 5 people cannot social distance. So already the fact that they tell you the maximum number of people you can have is 50 cuts you out already. And when they do these patrols, chances that your license is going to be revoked are really high. But at the high end, but even when they have 150 people or at the casinos, they'll get their license for the night, and in the morning they already have it back. Using what method? It's not even 8 hours. People are not back in the office. How did they get it back? You really don't know. So it also shows how high the levels of corruption are, and those we know really contribute to the levels of inequality and how people live. So I think in the nutshell, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really, again, you know, really, I suppose it's stark and it's harsh. And, you know, what all three of you have shown is the kind of the way in which COVID has, as you've said, amplified inequalities and worsened these, you know, terrible inequalities which exist, but also kind of in new ways. And in particular, you know, you've all highlighted issues of housing, you know, healthcare, education, you know, the unemployment. And it's interesting to see the, of course, the similarities across them. And just in terms now, I want to move on. And, you know, again, we could talk, you know, for much longer on this. And it is important to try and get through kind of what we can here for listeners and for the wider, you know, globally for people who are listening in terms of solutions. You know, people really are looking for solutions and want to see, you know, what should be done. So maybe I'll ask each of you in turn kind of to outline what you think are kind of the key, maybe 3 solutions each that need to be implemented. And maybe also if you might comment on the vaccines, because I know that's something that's talked about globally now, the huge inequality of access to vaccines. And maybe I start with you, Maria.
Yeah. So here in Mexico, if we were a building, it's a country where the top floor stays in the top floor and the bottom floor stays there. I mean, there is almost no social mobility between floors. So it tend to have the mind in mind that the reality that is around me is the only one that exists and the only one in which I can make a difference. So I think that the first step to really have a change and really have solutions is to have in mind that we can have a Mexico without poverty, so, and without inequalities. So as I was telling you, I think that is very stuck, like in mind, this image and this reality as it is like impossible to fix it. So I think that the first step is like start to think that it is possible, and it is possible with a really, really, really change that doesn't come only from the government. So the people coming together. And it's really important to have in mind which is the obligations and the responsibilities of each actor in this process and this complex problem, because it's a really complex problem. So we need complex solutions, but we have to have in mind which is the responsibility of the governments, as it's the warranty of social rights and public services with quality and equality, because we are stuck in our floor because it's different the type of health services, and it's different the type of education services, and it's different everything that we before the pandemic we had differences in our daily life, but now it's a cause of life or death. So we need complex solutions that come from very creative minds, and that it's a compromise between governments and social and the society in general. So we think that we need to fight for really, really different services, really a warranty of human rights and social rights. Because I have even listening very in forums of people that are on the top floor saying, but okay, they want health services, but why don't they work for it? Why don't they look for a job so they can have a private services? So in our minds, many times there is no human rights or social rights like that, like a right, like a thing that the governments are obligated to warranty us. So I think that the first step is to visibilize not only the problems but the solutions, and have in mind that it's possible. And then I think that it's very important to put faces on it, because many times, and I am like the face of that, many times we only see the problems through numbers and through percentages, and that's I think that make a little bit like far away the problems, and we need to feel them closer and put faces and female faces and young faces. I think that is very important, and then find the right ears so they can listen to these solutions, because many times I think that there are activists talk to other activists, and we are all like we all agree, you know. So I think that it's very important to find different ears, and I think that there are some really good ears in governments and in public, in policymakers. So I think that this conversation won't be easy, but I think that it is really possible, and we have to be very creative and very, very serious about the proposals that we are doing.
Great. Thank you so much, Maria. That was, again, lots of things to think about in that and engage with. And of course, we know all the solutions to all the problems do exist. And it's a lack of, as you say, you know, the need to share ideas, the need to, you know, put a face on them, and particularly look at, I think, the human rights, you know, of everybody, and making, you know, an obligation on governments. Thank you for that. Kulumanu, what's your kind of key? What do you think are the key solutions to moving this, to achieving equality?
Okay, so for South Africa, really, I feel that firstly, we need long-term solutions, because the problems that we have right now are not problems that came with the global pandemic. It's problems that were there, you know. So we've had policies, for example, in the basic education sector that speak to the fact that we need to have rid of the country of all pit latrine toilets in schools and mud schools, for example. And that still hasn't happened, even though the government gave itself a timeline in terms of doing that. And those conditions already in schools are not hygienic. So how do we expect them now to have hygienic conditions during the pandemic, right? So we need long-term solutions like that, building of schools, and making sure that schools are in good conditions for learners to learn. One of the biggest conversations right now in the country, and even before the global pandemic was the conversation of a basic income grant in order to alleviate the stresses of poverty and just hunger in our communities. And that was a conversation that people were slowly starting to entertain. And I feel then that is also a conversation that the government should start to entertain, as they've already started having this alleviation grant where they give people a certain amount of money monthly so that they are at least then helped because they can't go to work. They were already unemployed, those of them that didn't only get retrenched now. So that is another solution that our country really needs to start entertaining, the conversation around basic income grant, and the government needs to already start experimenting with that in order to tackle hunger and poverty, and also in order to tackle unemployment. Because with that kind of money, people can really start small and start building for themselves instead of waiting on the government, you know, to be the one that gives them jobs and solutions, right? Because this whole thing of the basic income grant was experimented with in Namibia just next door. And it was something that I was working with. People showed initiative that they want to do things for themselves. They want to start small businesses for themselves to support themselves. Another thing, lastly, that I is education. And I feel that now the government can see and to also have electricity, because there's no point in having all of that won't have electricity, because our country is currently experiencing large bouts of load shedding because of also corruption, you know. So that's something that also needs to be tackled in our country, that how do we then ensure that when we supply students with these gadgets, they're able to put them to use, because it's no use to give a student that is stuck in a village a laptop because they won't be able to use it. So how do we then migrate these students back to risk and back to campuses, make sure they're still socially distanced to do what they need to do in order for them to ascertain, you know, their education. And lastly, there needs to really be a tackle in corruption. Because we have seen the fees of the COVID-19 Solidarity Fund in South Africa that were meant to help communities and that were meant to help people and that were meant to alleviate stresses from the government and their budget plundered. Those funds were plundered and they ended up not helping people. And now the country is just stuck, not able to even get the vaccine for its people quite in time, you know, and depending on donations from other countries and depending on donations from organizations and such, you know, for protective equipment gear for first-liners and for frontliners. So it's something that needs to be really tackled, because corruption and lack of sheer will, political will to do things, is really the problem of South Africa. It's not the only problem, but it's one of the biggest problems. Because if our leaders and our government had the sheer political will to do things, and they were not as corrupt as they are, things would at least start getting done in the country, and we would be moving forward, and we wouldn't even in the first place be where we are, because we are over two decades after a supposed you know, democracy. And so we should be getting somewhere. We should be starting to getting somewhere. We should be starting to look like a democratic country. But as other elderly people even feel at this point, they feel that services, even during apartheid, you know, were better, which is something that is totally ridiculous, because they were oppressed under apartheid. They were literally living under them and they couldn't do anything under apartheid, but they still feel like things were better in terms of services. So you can imagine how ridiculous and how crazy things are in the country for someone to feel that the time that they were oppressed is better than the time that they are not oppressed, because they're not being provided with services. The government is virtually bringing in the bucket system and not giving people proper sanitation in other parts of the country and other parts of Cape Town to be in particular. So it's quite crazy, and it's all because of corruption and the lack of political will to do things. So it's not that we don't have the solutions. The solutions are there, but it's just that the government is highly corrupt and they don't have the will to do anything for their people.
Thank you. That it's a really, again, you know, so important, you know, to put across, you know, what is the reality on the ground, you know, in countries like South Africa what is happening, and it's really important for the world to hear that. And as you say, that, you know, there are solutions. The most important thing, there are solutions. It is a question of political will. But I'm also struck by what you say about, you know, the pandemic, and again, the issue of, for example, access, the lack of access to basic sanitary things, healthcare, affects all of us globally because it's a global pandemic. And so we need to see, I think, hopefully this pandemic will give people more that sense of connection that we have to address inequalities around the world in order to be able to fight pandemics like this properly. I'm going to go next to Mwalima from Zambia in regard to what do you feel and what do you believe in, are the key solutions in regard to inequality?
Okay, thanks a lot. So in terms of the key solutions that I feel need to be taken up during this pandemic, but also post the pandemic, it's firstly and foremost, I think what is really key right now is for our duty bearers and for the government to consider when they're doing their consultations, because from time to time when they want to find solutions to various problems, including COVID-19, they're calling on various stakeholders, but all these are elite people that do not know the realities of the people that live on the front lines of inequality, and they'll not be able to speak to realities of the people that are living the worst of lives in the country, really. So I feel one of the key solutions that the government needs to take up is consultation with the people that are actually living on the front lines of inequality, so that they're able to collect people-led solutions, because in all these various different places, people have solutions that actually could work for them, could work for the country, and could improve things. But for as long as every time we're doing consultations, we want to consult the elite because they have the right education, as we think, quote unquote, we're not going to find solutions that actually work for the people on the ground, because we don't know what their realities are. We don't know what their lived experiences are. So one of the key solutions, and this is long-term really, is to begin to have consultations with the people that are actually living these experiences, the people that are actually living the worst of lives, because they will know what would work for them and what would work long-term, as compared to assuming this is the best way to go, this is the best course of action and stuff like that. Sometimes our priorities are not their own priorities, and it's not very helpful at all. The second thing is, I think the government needs to introduce, during this COVID pandemic era and post that, they need to introduce social protection, socioeconomic protection measures that actually prioritize the majority vulnerable Zambian citizens and not prioritize the elite. So if they're introducing protection measures to protect businesses, what are they thinking about? Is it the mines that are the priority because they bring in the dollar, they bring in all of these foreign currencies that could work for them and help them with the economy, or is it the smaller businesses of the people that feed hand to mouth and stuff like that? So I think it's really thinking more of social protection measures that protect and prioritize the majority poor Zambians, as compared to prioritizing the elite who needs to find a way anyway, with or without them. And lastly, I think just to wrap it up, it's the issue of improving the public service financing, really. We've seen how bad the healthcare system can be, how bad the education system can be, and all these other different sectors. How are we improving the financing to these sectors so that they can be at the same level, almost at the same level as the private counterparts? How are we improving them to ensure that the people that are living on the front lines of inequality are actually able to access quality services as much as everyone? So, yeah, I think pretty much in a nutshell, what would be key is to really improve public healthcare financing, public service financing in general as well. And in order for us to do this, I think, like my comrade from South Africa said, in order for us to do this, one of the key problems that we have in Africa, and I don't know if it's world over as well, and in Zambia, now it's gotten really super worse, if there's a word like that, is corruption, really. For as long as we do not direct the money to the relevant needs that it needs to be directed to, and as long as we continue to overprice roads, overprice everything that is there, and continue exploiting the system, we won't have money to improve financing to any other sector at all. So for as long as corruption is able to go down, we'll have a bit more money to improve financing to all these other sectors that we're talking about, and our problems would dramatically reduce. But as long as corruption takes precedence and our duty bearers are not intentional about they're not intentional about fighting corruption, and they're not zero tolerance to corruption. Things are just going to keep getting worse. Thanks a lot.
I completely agree. I think, you know, corruption is so endemic globally in terms of, you know, what's going on. It's a corruption of redistribution of poor distribution of resources. Just to finish up, we know that Fight Inequality, as I mentioned from the outset, is organizing a week of and you and communities and people around the world are organizing a week of protest, different forms of protest and resistance against the Davos, to coincide with Davos and the meeting of the global elite. Maybe for the last maybe a minute each, a minute and a half each, you could outline kind of what the key kind of events, if you are involved in, or you think people, I suppose what I would like as well, yeah, maybe an event that you're involved in, and kind of what hope do you think is there, an inspiration to get people involved, and can we change this? Can we fight and beat inequality? So maybe you first, Maria.
Yeah, I think that the most important thing that we're doing that is really unusual is, like you said, different forms of activism for the same problem. So I think that coming together is the first thing that we're doing that is disruptive, and I think that makes us like feel that we're not alone. I think if this conversation that we're having right now is giving me a little bit of peace and a little bit of I don't know, like this sense that I'm not alone in this fight. I think that the most important thing that we're doing is that we're like feeling the less lonely ever, because we're coming together. Here in Mexico it's really difficult, and the first thing the first problem or the first difficulty that here in Mexico to make the alliance was like a challenge is to have a diverse conversation, because we're all activists but from different perspectives and different here in Mexico we have many Mexicos, because it's really different in the south, in the north, in the rural areas and in the cities. So have one voice and one voice that looks very diverse, I think that is really important. And we're doing different types of artistic expressions in many cities in Mexico and all over Latin America. We're doing concerts. We're doing photograph galleries, digital presence, because we also think that it's important not only that other parts of the world see us, but the communities to see the problem in artistic way. We think that is very powerful and very, very clear for them. So it's like inside the country and outside the country, this type of communication, artistic. We think that art really touch the emotions and really touch the heart. And I think that the heart is the motivation to take action. I really think that this alliance is. I think I am moved by the angry, and then you meet other persons that are also very, very angry. So it made hope. I think that the collective anger make hope. And also we're doing in many public spaces these signs in the floor with candles about asking for no more inequality in Latin America. So it will be, I think, that very beautiful to watch.
Great. Thank you so much, Maria. We look forward to seeing it online and in social media and sharing it everywhere. And just to say to listeners that the hashtag is hashtag fight inequality and also hashtag better than Davos. And I'll also, you can go to fightinequality.org. And the Fight Inequality Alliance on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Chulumanco, what in terms of South Africa have you plans of action and maybe some words of inspiration for people?
Thank you. So, no what's planned in South Africa as the Fighting Inequality Alliance is a online rally. So, in the online rally, really will be just it'll be different people from the different movements in South Africa that are part of the Fighting Inequality Alliance, telling their stories, really, what were their experience of the lockdown and the global pandemic. We'll be having people who will be analyzing the solutions that our government brought forth and have they worked and in what ways can we make sure that they work and really put out their words of hope and encouragement and also a call of action to the people of our country, the continent, and the rest of the diaspora. But also at the same time, not only just that, movements and organizations that are part of the Inequality Alliance have been doing a lot on the ground, really, and working with communities, hospitals, and stuff like that. So they will be continuing with that sort of work, and they'll be having their own actions, which will be, when they happen, which will be amplified on our Fighting Inequality Alliance socials, particularly on Facebook. We have a Facebook group. So yeah, that will be broadcasted there and all of that. And basically, oh, another thing is that at this point in time, the COVID-19 coalition is also leading a people's vaccine campaign. And they're also part of the Fighting Inequality Alliance. So they're leading that. And we're very much part of that. So those are the kinds of things that will be happening in South Africa. And really, I think it's time right now for us to build solidarity, you know, across the board as marginalized groups and come together, because quite clearly there's nothing that will be done if we also just quiet and we do our little organizing in silos and in you know, our own little spaces. So now it's time that we really show solidarity with each other and we start just, you know, in going out there and showing that the system has long, you know, exploited us and very little has been done about that. Even the little that's been done has not been amplified in many ways, and it has been suppressed in many ways. And now it's time that as the people, we rise and we just take that power and we take action moving forward so that things can go in the best interests of people.
Great. Thank you so much. Inspiring words there, but taking power and people, you know, really taking action, and it is absolutely time. And lastly, to Mwalima in Zambia, in terms of, you know, what action is going on there, and some inspiration as well for our global listeners and people to take us through the coming period.
Thanks, Roy. I think in terms of activities that we're doing this year, firstly, we're not doing a lot of physical activities because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we would like to protect our members as well as the communities that we work with. But we'll be doing a couple of virtual stances and activities that we'll be doing. And we're using especially art, that's mostly music and poetry too. So we're using music and art to, we're using art and especially music and poetry to communicate our demands, to highlight people and solutions, to also communicate people's protest messages around the global protest to fight inequality. So some of the things that we're doing is, firstly, we're having a song release. So we recorded a song with some of the top Zambian artists who are also activists. That's about 6 of them. So we'll be releasing that song on Sunday as we are kickstarting our week of action. And the song is really just there to create awareness among the general public around inequalities, to raise people's demands with collective messaging from a couple of different people. It's also there to put a call to action to a government to begin to do the right thing and to begin to fight inequality more intentionally and proactively. Other than the song, we're also going to be releasing a couple of poetry videos that we have started recording towards the end of last year with some of our partners that called Word Smash Poetry. So we'll be releasing those poetry videos to speak to some of the inequalities that currently exist, what are some of the people-led solutions that the government can take on, and all different types of solutions that people have come up with, as well as just really speak truth to power and begin to regain the space that people are losing as the civic space continues to shrink in the country. And the key thing that we'll be doing is we've been collecting videos from our frontline activists, as well as members and allies and influencers that will then be posting, who've been giving us a couple of protest messages, and we'll be posting them on our social media platforms, as well as the platforms of all our social media influencers that are attached to the Fight to Unite Alliance. And finally, we'll be having a virtual concert where we have all our artists coming together and doing performances on various social justice music that they've been doing over the years, as well as the Fear Artists United song that they recently recorded and were releasing on Sunday. So we'll have that concert. I think that will be like our beacon event. And then we'll have a couple of our partners coming to speak to what type of work that they do, what are people's lived experiences in the areas that they work in, also speaking to what are their demands for the government, as well as for the leaders, and so on and so forth. So pretty much those are some of the activities that we've prepared for this year's Global Week of Action. And we're trying to use as much social media as possible, and especially from influencers, to ensure that we actually begin to steer the conversations within the country during this week to revolve around inequality and for people to begin to think solutions. As much as we're highlighting all these problems, what are really the solutions that can actually work? Yeah. What are we really telling our government and our duty bearers in terms of the solutions that they can take on? What is our call to action to other people? Because sometimes when you just really have activists talking, it's like, you have a few people in the room that just seem noisy, but when you have everybody backing you up, you have all the grassroots activists, all the grassroots people, all the people that are actually living on the front lines of inequality, doing the actual talking themselves, then people begin to realize the problem is actually big and people know what the problem is. So, okay. Yeah, having everybody steering the conversation at country level to revolve around inequality. I mean, this COVID, inequality in the country, as it has been, and revolving around what are some of the solutions that we can begin to take up as people and also as duty bearers in the country.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to have you, Mumulima, Kulamanu, and Maria. Fantastic. Keep up the struggle, which I know you will, and campaigns around Fight Inequality. We're actually going to finish up with a song which Fight Inequality Alliance Zambia are releasing for the global protest, called It's Not Fair. And the Fight Inequality Artists United have done that. So we hope you enjoy that. And the key messages from that is people have the power, and that it's not fair, and we can fight inequality. And we thank you to Tony for producing this, Tony Groves, the producer, and to Jenny Ricks from Fight Inequality Alliance for bringing us together. And we look forward to continuing all in the campaign to fight inequality. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us today.
Another K production.
It's not fair.
Sitting on Kalebe Nanguva Kutebe Nanguva Kona Nanjala Mujalo Chatu Chino. It's not fair.
Eti Twi Kaleba Mbiba Leli Lava Mbiba Lela Lane Sala Mujalo Chimo. It's not fair.
Kaumpa Wivone Kangati Wachitila Dala Mumesa Mwabene Wodila Chitoza Oziseka Uloga Wa Oseka, yeah. And she choose to be born in a society that does not prioritize the affairs of the poor, the weak, and the vulnerable.
Chuma cha chalo, chuma cha vonse. Ukwambira malonda, baga na kuliposi. Ukwibile chalo, kuibila bantu. Mubuchushi, temwabu muchishi. Opportunity, pele kulibonse. Pantu, bonse, tukamilo buchinda mi. Pela big man.
Pela tu hai.
Yeti tuikale bambi bale, nila bambi bale. Rara nesana mchalo chimo yo.
Chalo.
stop the animosity towards a woman, stop inequality and acknowledge that we are all equal, there's no difference. It don't matter where you come from, it don't matter where you grew up, it don't matter where you belong, the north or the south, everybody have to benefit from the mining, the copper, the gold, not what them signing. Nifazire kirake tululo, arika verangi kurikana ni musulo. Nifazire kirake tululo, wanyanda. Mwabu pilomo, baba mubanani, baba muabana. Nipatela nikolo, nimezi ya kunwa. Na ilimu, baba mubafumile, baba mubanyanda. Teti tuikale bambi baleni na bambi balera. Na nensala kucharo chimo yo.
So we are cry, you see. Every morning, every night, them a lie to me. When them no know how we live and survive, you see. Baka dwala wa maenda kuma milpa. Ise tika dwala ni minkwala za expired. Nifuno ziba mwati awi o Zambian. Chifuka benangu, we are strangers in our own land.
Seven sexually zulako. Alavije asogoleli yako. Power to the people. You and me are the people. Itandi sande.
Inequality using people power
is not fair.
Never should we forget that the power of the people is stronger than the people in power.
It's not fair.
And we are the Fight Inequality Alliance. You, me, we are stronger together.
It's not fair.